All right, we are starting hour number three, and a huge college football weekend getting underway with a game tonight with Ohio State and Indiana. So we are talking college football, and of course, on Saturday, you've got Alabama and Florida State. So there's a lot to look forward to this weekend with college football, and then, of course, the NFL season starts 1 week from tonight, and then so this is our last Sunday off until February. That's the way I look at it.
Oh, yeah. It's going to – once it gets rolling, Grant, you know, it's the matchups begin to mean much more. A team loses one game. You can't lose two because you don't want to lose pace. You want to try to get up in the top four, and standings and all that stuff means a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. All right. So we've got, you know, again, in the Pac-12, all the top quarterbacks – and, you know, with USC and Washington, and we can go right on down the list, but Rich Sermonello, college football reporter for College Football News, is joining us right now. Rich, thank you very much for coming on. I'm Grant Napier along with Doug Christie. How are you?
Gentlemen, doing well, and thank you for the invitation.
Well, we are very happy to have you. As we get ready for all intents and purposes, the first weekend of college football, what's the number one storyline on your list?
Well, I mean, there were a few. Obviously, in terms of week one, the storyline is the matchup between Alabama and Florida State. A number one team, preseason number one team, has never opened with an opponent ranked as high as number three. So in terms of on field, that game, I think, lives up to the hype. But in terms of the broader landscape, one of the storylines I'll be watching this year is, can the SEC bounce back and regain their status as the top conference in the country? You know, obviously they fell behind the ACC last year. Clemson wins a national championship. Lamar Jackson from Louisville wins the Heisman Trophy. But the SEC I'm watching very closely, guys, because this decade they have not had a preponderance of good quarterbacks. But after using so many young kids last year, Jacob Eason at Georgia, Shea Patterson at Ole Miss, Jalen Hurts at Alabama, I think this could be a league that finally has quarterbacks to match some of those defenses.
You know, you mentioned Lamar Jackson, and being a Heisman Trophy winner, coming back for another year and having the chance to do something that hasn't been done in quite a number of years, back-to-back Heisman winner, does it surprise you that you're not hearing as much about the hype there, or now that you got, you know, other quarterbacks in the mix and bigger guys?
That's a great point, Doug. I mean, I didn't think about it, but that's an excellent point because, you know, Lamar Jackson is the reigning Heisman winner. He was the most electrifying athlete in college football last season, and yet, you know, Sam Darnold's getting a lot more attention out of USC, justifiably so. Trace McSorley at Penn State, even Jared Stidham, the transfer from Baylor, now at Auburn, making a lot more headlines. Had a chance to sit down face-to-face with Lamar in March, and you know, I got the impression that he has a razor focus after the way last year ended, because he won the Heisman, but as you guys remember, they struggled against Houston, struggled and lost to Kentucky, had a very rough bowl game against LSU. So, you know, Lamar wants to become a more complete quarterback. The athleticism is built in. He is dynamic in the open field. But as defenses forced him to stay in the pocket late last year, he struggled as a passer. So his junior season, the focus is now on him becoming a more complete quarterback. And I think in terms of the lack of attention, there is a wait-and-see approach as to whether or not Lamar Jackson can match and then surpass what he did in 2016.
Rich, give me your outlook, your take this year on USC, which has very high expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little bit unsure if USC is going to be the playoff team that everyone expects. Now, Sam Darnold is as good as advertised. I look at him similar to an Andrew Luck in terms of that complete quarterback, that cerebral quarterback. He's going to put the time in the film room and on the practice field as well as on Saturdays. And obviously he was dynamic throughout his first season last year, culminating in that Rose Bowl victory. So I don't think he's the issue. But I look at the line play of USC, particularly the offensive line, And then I look at this program recently. Maybe it's unfair to do this, guys, but if you look at the last couple of times that USC began a season with expectations of playing for a national championship, they did not handle that very well. So I look at USC as more of a 10-win team than an 11 or 12-win team this year, and I still believe, because of their physicality in the trenches, I think Washington is still the premier team in the Pac-12 entering 2017.
You know, if I look at the top 25, there are a few teams that you might see move up. But if you come outside the top 10, you got out of these three, give me who you might see in that final four. Michigan, Auburn, and LSU, 11, 12, and 13, respectively.
I'm going to go with Auburn because of the kid that I mentioned in Jarrett Stidham. I think Michigan could surprise. I think everybody is focusing just on the lack of returning starters. But Jim has recruited so well over the past couple of seasons, and a lot of the kids that are who are new starters, like a Rashawn Gary on the defensive line, Mo Hurst on the defensive line, those kids really were like starters last year. They were key rotational players. So I think Michigan will be better than the number of returning starters, but Auburn has the defense. They have the running game with Cameron Petway and Kerryon Johnson. They have a physical offensive line, particularly on the interior center and guards, but what's been missing the past two seasons has been quarterback play for Gus Malzahn. He brings in a new offensive coordinator in Chip Lindsey, who's going to activate the dual threat potential of a quarterback, and I think Stidham is the real deal. Now, week two against Clemson and that defensive line, that's going to be an enormous test. But Auburn, if you're looking for someone other than Alabama in the SEC, I think the Tigers are the team, particularly if Stidham is as good as I think he'll be.
Rich, let's talk about Alabama-Florida State. If Florida State loses but they keep it close, can that go down into a category of a good loss? I know in college football there's not really good losses, mm-hmm. but the point is this is a long year. Let's say Florida State loses, but let's say it's a close game.
Yep.
Talk about their season the rest of the way. How could they still get into the Final Four? Would they have to run the table, or do you believe they could afford one more loss?
Grant, I think you nailed it. I think it really can't be USC versus Alabama opening weekend last year. I think that was 52-6, and yeah, USC also lost to Utah along the way. But the Trojans were never able to climb back into the playoff race despite finishing the season so well. The way I look at it is, if Florida State is close, if this is a 28-24 tie, if this is a competitive game in the fourth quarter, I think voters are going to look at this as a positive. I think it is a good win. I think they're going to benefit the Seminoles for taking this game. I think if either team loses a close game, they're going to get bonus points just for scheduling. And now, in terms of what has to happen the rest of the way, you know, a second loss, it all depends upon what happens in the other conferences. But Florida State naturally will have to win the ACC. They'll have to beat Clemson. My point is, guys, there are opportunities on that schedule. You still have Florida. You still have Louisville. You still have the defending champs in Clemson. So I think if this is a close game, yeah, it stinks to open the season 0-1, but both of these teams will have an opportunity for a rematch in January.
A team that their boosters really want to do well and be strong. Last year they fire Charlie Strong. Now they hire Tom Herman. Do you see this as a year for Texas to begin to start building and come back to prominence?
Yeah, and I think it would have been if Charlie was still in Austin. I don't know if he didn't get enough time. I understand they were three consecutive seven-loss seasons. I get the desire to make a change. But Charlie did a really good job of stockpiling talent. That's the one thing that changed. Mack Brown, at the end of his tenure with the Longhorns, was having some problems keeping the top talent in Texas in Austin. They were now going to places like A&M, they were going to Baylor, they were going to Oklahoma. Charlie Strong started to get those 4- and 5-star kids again, like linebacker Malik Jefferson. So the talent is there. I think Charlie would have begun to turn it around if he was there. Now the cupboard being full, it's the to the benefit of Tom Herman. You no longer have a rookie quarterback. Shane Buechele is a sophomore. I think Chris Warren the second will be nearly as good as Deontay Foreman was last year. So, you know, there's a lot of talent. Colin Johnson, Devin Duvernay, the wide receiver. So the youth that existed, the building that Charlie did over the last couple of seasons, for better or for worse, I think Tom Herman and his staff are going to be the beneficiaries this season.
You know, Rich, I wanted to get your opinion on some of the quarterbacks in college football. And a couple of moments ago, you talked about how you like Washington in the Pac-12. And, of course, they're led by Jake Browning. Mm-hmm. And Jake had a phenomenal year last year, but he also played the end of the year with a bum shoulder that needed surgery. And yet I'm looking at a lot of people that cover college football, and they don't have him as a top five quarterback in college football. I don't quite understand that. I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I it depends on who the evaluator is. You know, if it's an NFL scout, they're going to look at his size, which doesn't match up to a Sam Darnold. Josh Allen, if you haven't looked at Wyoming football, he's going to be one of the more fascinating players in college football this season, because I talk to scouts. They tell me that he has top five overall potential playing in Laramie. This is a kid that was really virtually unrecruited coming out of high school, but now he's developed 6'4", 6'5", 225 pounds, active outside the pocket, reminds me a little bit of a young and undeveloped Cam Newton, so a tremendous amount of potential. But if the folks you're talking to are strictly looking at NFL potential, Jake is smaller, doesn't have as much zip on his throws, excellent college quarterback. But if I look ahead, whether it's in 2018 or 2019, I think he's more of a third to fifth round type of a draft choice, as opposed to the Darnolds, to the Josh Allens, who are potentially top 10 overall picks.
With Rich Sermonello, college football reporter for College Football News. Out of 59 first-place votes, Alabama gets 52 for number one. Rich, what might be their Achilles heel that teams might exploit this year?
It's a great question. It's not going to be offense, and that's going to be interesting for Nick Saban. The last few years he's had to break in, both he and Lane Kiffin, when Lane was still the offensive coordinator, they had to break in new quarterbacks, veterans, and then last year a true freshman in Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. Offense looks really good. If there's a question mark on this team, it's not defensive talent, because they always have blue chippers in Tuscaloosa, and Nick and Jeremy Pruitt do a tremendous job of coaching those kids up. But I want to know who the defensive leaders are. They don't have as many vocal defensive leaders. There isn't necessarily the Reuben Foster, the Jonathan Allen. Minka Fitzpatrick is a phenomenal talent, arguably the best defensive player along with Florida State safety Derwin James. But he's not a real vocal kid. So I'm going to want to know, when this team is down in the second half, who is rallying the troops on defense? So it's more of an intangible for me, guys. Mm-hmm. It's more of leadership. Who is going to be the vocal leader of this team? But it's going to be interesting this year, though, because in the early going, you might see the offense tugging a little more of the weight than the defense does.
We love talking college football, and again, the Ohio State-Indiana game is underway. Ohio State second-ranked. You know, last year, Doug and I were talking about the teams that I really think surprised the heck out of everybody. I think you got to put Washington. I don't think, and again, I don't want to, maybe you did, but I don't think anybody had Washington as a Final Four team.
I did not.
Right.
No, I'd like to be able to stake claim to that.
I don't think a lot of people thought Penn State would be dancing right where they were, right on the doorstep, you know, with a chance at the end. But so let's talk more about Penn State. The resurgence of this program based on where they were just a couple of years ago, to me, it's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, James Franklin did a remarkable job. You know, I also sat down at the same event. I was with Lamar Jackson. Trace McSorley was there, the Penn State quarterback. And, you know, we talked a lot about early September. If you remember, Penn State got off to a slow start. They struggled in the early going, had some defensive problems. But Trace said at some point they knew it was going to click. They knew the spark was there. But at some point, they just turned it on. And that combination of Trace McSorley at quarterback, Saquon Barkley, one of the two or three best running backs in the country, that offense with Joe Moorhead as the offensive coordinator just became unstoppable. Now, heading into this season, I have no concerns about the offense. They lost Chris Godwin, their top wide receiver, but there's a slew of kids ready to fill that void. Defensively, though, if Penn State is going to repeat as the Big Ten champ, I just need to see a little more pressure off of the edge. I need to see someone to replace Garrett Sickles, somebody who can get around the edge, get into the pocket, pressure a JT Barrett, pressure a Wilton Spate, really be able to kind of dictate the tempo defensively. But to your point, though, Grant, James Franklin, you know, I wasn't really sure when he came from Vandy whether or not he was going to have success with Penn State. They're kind of a funky crew in Happy Valley. I think they still are kind of clinging to the old days when Joe was there. But James Franklin has now embodied the culture of Penn State. He's really embraced it. And now that he's starting to get top kids from Ohio and Pennsylvania and New Jersey and Maryland, I think Penn State is here to stay. Penn State is going to be nip and tuck with the Michigans and the Ohio States as long as James Franklin is on the sidelines.
Okay, Rich, so if I start calling out a Final Four, you got Alabama in the Final Four?
I do.
Ohio State?
I do.
Okay, give me the last two.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Florida State, win or lose on Saturday night. I really like the makeup of this team. Love that Derwin James is back. The quarterback, DeAndre Francois, redshirt freshman last year, now is a sophomore. The issue quickly that I have on Saturday is I would like to see their offensive line have a few games under their belt before facing the Alabama defense. I think that's the difference in a Florida State loss, but I expect Francois to have a superb sophomore season. Keep an eye, guys, on true freshman running back Cam Akers. He won't be Dalvin Cook right away, but he could be Dalvin Cook by 2018. And I'm going to stick with Washington. So it's kind of boring. If you want a sleeper, I do like Auburn. I like Oklahoma State. If you want somebody outside of the top five or six, those are teams I like. But I'm going to kind of go with the chalk at this point.
That's great stuff. Rich, I got to tell you, you're
information.
Very much so. Really enjoyed that. Hopefully we can talk to you every now and then during the season. Phenomenal job.
I would love it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Rich.
That's a guy that knows the stuff right there.
Whew, man, I'm just firing heat on top of us, Grant. And what do you think about him going chalk there? Alabama, Ohio State, Florida State, and then he throws Washington in there at number eight.
Hmm.
Man, that's a... that's a Final Four. I didn't have Florida State in there. I was thinking, you know, that goes to show, Grant. So you're anticipating that either Alabama or Florida State loses, so because they play each other first game. So that happens. So you know you're going to have a one-loss team in there, and you can recover by playing teams that are, you know, like you said, some of these guys like Miami isn't playing anybody. So even though you might be 11-1, that probably won't help you.
All right, 339. 1140 is the local number. Again, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. The fact that we're, you know, again, we got a college football game on, Ohio State and Indiana. We've got the wrap-up of the NFL season tonight, and this is going to be quite a weekend in the National Football League because by Saturday, all the teams have to be down to 53, and there's going to be normally you have cut down after week three. This year they didn't do that. So now it's going to be, I got to tell you, like when you watch Hard Knocks after this week and you see Coach Cutter have to go in and, you know, they talk to 40-plus guys. Oof.
Yeah.
That can't be easy.
I started watching that last night. Yeah, it is really good. Got through the first two episodes. Saw Aguayo get cut. And he's since been picked up, the kicker from they picked in the second round from Florida State. They cut him. And, that is tough to watch guys walk in. Because normally, Grant, when assistant coach, the trainer, someone comes up to you and says, "Hey, Doug, how you doing?" Coach needs to talk to you. It's during that time of the year that you don't want to hear that. If you don't hear the coach wants to talk to you, you know you're in a good spot. And when they pair that with bring your playbook.
I know, boy.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
That's not a good one.
I think there are teams like – you look at a team like the Raiders, and you look at – a team like Kansas City, or you look at a team that has lost players during the preseason and or have a need at a certain position. Like, people were making a big deal when Joe Hayden got cut the other day.
Right.
Well, geez, a two-time Pro Bowler. Well, why do you think a team like Cleveland would cut a guy like Joe Hayden? I mean, he must have been awful in camp. I mean, there's no other reason. And so I'm a little leery when a player gets cut and all of a sudden he's a big name and you go to another team and everyone thinks, oh, gee, that's great, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, keep in perspective, why was that player cut? Do I think the Raiders could use some help on defense? Yes. Would it be worth bringing a guy in or two? Yes. But I just there are certain positions on the football field when I see a guy get cut. Like, I'll give you an example. Prince Amakamura.
Okay.
Okay, when he got cut last year.
Right.
I was kind of like, wow. And then I'm like, well, not really. But he was a high draft pick, first round draft pick. And you look at him and go, but he just never materialized. And he gets hurt a lot. And so, and he's not, I don't know if he's going to make the team now. So I guess what I'm saying is be careful just because a guy's a name. That's all I'm saying.
Hayden that was with Cleveland.
Yes.
He's now with Pittsburgh.
Yes.
I think some of that, Grant, might be what I would call shooting him the fair one, meaning a guy yep. who's getting older. You owe him a bunch of money, and you want to let him go because you're going with the youth movement and you allow him to be on a team that might be pushing the playoffs. So, or you pair it to kind of what you said, there might not be a lot left in the tank. So we'll have to wait and see when he, you know, maybe gets a rebirth in Pittsburgh.
All right, Doug. I'm Grant Napier along with Doug Christie. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about what I think has become one of the biggest scams in sport. That's next here on Sports 1140. I've said this for many years, and I told the 49er fans what would happen. It did happen. And I'm going to tell the Rams fans what will happen if you buy a personal seat license. You will end up regretting it, okay? The Rams are building a $2.6 billion stadium. And guess who's paying for it? The person that's going to the game is paying for it. Because they are going to have the world's costliest venue with a ticket pricing plan that's going to offer the most expensive seats in NFL history. You ready for this?
Tell it to me.
This is from the LA Times. You ready for this? The highest priced personal seat licenses for Rams games could range from $175,000 to $225,000 per seat. That would far surpass the $150,000 PSLs offered by the Cowboys when they went to AT&T Stadium. Mm. Now, what does the personal seat license entitle you to?
Right.
It entitles you to purchase a Rams season ticket after paying the one-time fee. All right? And by the way, this
So I got to pay to pay?
Yes. This will be the first time that that it would be refundable without interest after 50 years. All right? The buyer then must purchase a game ticket with the best club seats tentatively priced between $350 and $400 a game. You can also sell to another party with the permission from the Rams, which is pretty standard in the NFL. All right. Now, I'm just going to say this. All right. There's 70,240 seats that are going to be in this stadium. Almost all of them will require seat licenses. All right. The only seats, or I should say, the only thing that's not going to require a PSL would be standing room tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So they're projecting that 80% of the PSL revenue will come from club seats. And the most expensive club seats are expected to be closer to $175,000 when prices are final. All right, so I'm going to give you a little example here, okay? The NFL's three newest stadiums have priced their licenses much, much lower. Atlanta, who's opening up their new stadium next week, $45,000. Minnesota, $9,500. And San Francisco, $80,000. All right, now I'm just going to go on here for a minute, all right? I went through this as a longtime season ticket holder for the New York Giants. My father was. I inherited the tickets and his will. And my brother is a school teacher on Long Island. He teaches high school math. When they built MetLife Stadium, Doug, they attached personal seat licenses to both the Giants and the Jets.
Okay.
My brother told me that he could not afford the personal seat licenses, which were $10,000 apiece, and our ticket went from $80 a game to $140.
Understandable.
All right? And I told him, I understand, and I said, you know what? We can always get tickets whenever we want on the secondary market. And I said, I've got enough contacts, whatever. Okay. Then the 49ers built Levi Stadium. And before there was a shovel in the ground, I went on the air and I told 49er fans that, you know, they were all happy and giddy about their new stadium. And I said, before you get too happy about it, just be aware that you're going to be very unhappy in the near future. And I took call after call after call. This was before any 49er season ticket holders got their information in the mail about how much everything would cost.
Right.
And I took call after call after call from many 49er fans that were priced out and who had been going to the games all the way back when they were at Kezar Stadium. All right? Now, I understand that we live in a supply and demand world. Maybe you can't afford it, but there's a guy in line that wants it, and we're going to make the money. Now, how many people do you think spent big money to buy personal seat licenses at Levi Stadium that are still glad that they spent that money? Because I can tell you right now, okay, very few. I will tell you that if you want to go watch the Dallas Cowboys, okay, on Sunday night next week against the New York Giants,
okay,
all right, you can go on the secondary market and
we're looking for two tickets, Grant.
What's that?
We're looking for two tickets.
You want two tickets? All right, I'll tell you what.
Two tickets.
All right.
You and I.
Okay. You want to go to the game?
Not really, but
all right. I'll tell you what. Why don't we do this? Why don't we go to the Seahawks-Packers game first?
Now you're talking.
All right. And then we'll just go take a quick flight and we'll go to Dallas. We'll go to the Sunday night game.
Okay.
All right.
There you go.
All right. So let's say you want to go to that game. All right. And this is a huge game, division rival. It is Sunday night, right?
Yep.
Okay. You can go right now. And have you ever been in that stadium? It's spectacular.
No, I have not.
All right. You can get tickets for that game. I'm looking at tickets here for $175,
oh.
$163, $214. Now, if you want to sit at the 50-yard line,
yeah, I want
15 rows off the field,
yeah, that's where
then you're going to pay $800. But I would think the face value of those tickets would be pretty close to that.
Right.
Here's the point I'm trying to make. You don't need to buy your seat license if you want to go to the games. Now, I get the fact that, well, gee, it gives you the rights to get playoff tickets. Well, I don't know if the Rams are ever going to be in the playoffs again. So good luck with that, okay? And so, it drives me crazy. You know, all right, let's say you want to go to the Cowboys-Cardinals game, Monday, September 25th.
Gotcha.
Monday Night Football. That $800 ticket for the Giants game
right.
is $398 for that game. If you want to sit in a good seat, actually, that's at Arizona. Let me go. I'm sorry. I made a mistake there. That game's at Arizona. But I'm trying to give you an example here.
Yes.
All right? Let me go down. All right, here's the game the following Sunday. All right? Speaking of those mighty Rams. All right? You can sit good seats, $175. Good seat, $150. Here's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
Why the hell do you want to pay thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars out of your pocket for the right to buy season tickets when you can go on the secondary market and get tickets to any game you want? And it's sometimes, okay, like if you're a Niners fan and your team has sucked the last few years, you can't sell your tickets on the secondary market because nobody's buying them.
Right.
So not only have you paid for your personal seat license, you can't even sell your tickets. You see how many empty seats were at the Niner games last year?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this is just the PSL may look good and everything, and fans are going, boy, it's a new stadium and I can't wait. The majority of fans a couple years later go, that was the stupidest and worst thing I've ever done.
It sounds like it. When you talk about $225,000 per seat, Grant, that's not for a pair. That's not for four seats for your family. That's, I mean, you're going to spend almost $1 million for a family.
Don't worry about it. You can get it refunded after 50 years.
I'll be dead.
Thank you.
Okay? And my kids will be me. Goodness gracious, Grant. And even if you take a median price and you say $100,000, You times that by 35,000 seats.
Are you kidding me? You could go out and buy a freaking house.
Right.
Well, you're going to buy. Well, who the hell is going to do this? My point is, I understand there's a lot of money in that market.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. That is absolutely ridiculous. If you want to go to the game, you know what? For $100,000 grand, we could. Man.
This is L.A. Yeah. They've already had two teams move out of the market. You want to know why? Fans didn't go to the games.
Exactly.
And you know what? Both teams were really good.
Yeah.
The Rams were good back then, and so were the Raiders. Let me tell you something right now. If the Rams stink every year, are you kidding me?
Empty.
That place is going to be they sold out 100,000 people for the first preseason game last year, right?
Yeah.
The excitement of the Rams coming back from St. Louis. Did you see what that Coliseum looked like in December?
Yeah.
Nobody was there.
You know what the new Rams stadium will be? It will be USC home field advantage. That's what it'll be eventually. That's what's going to happen. They'll get
what
out of
joke.
The Coliseum, and they will be playing over at this new place.
All right. If you're a Niner season ticket holder and paid for a PSL and you're still happy with that, I would love to hear from you. If you have purchased a PSL anywhere in America and you're still happy with it, I'd love to hear from you right now. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. All right, we are back with you on Sports 1140 KHDK. Let's get to a couple of calls here while we have time, and we start with Arnold. Hello, Arnold.
Hey, Greg. Hey, Doug. Hey, Grant, so are you a PSL holder for the Giants?
No, we decided not to.
Okay, I have a couple questions. So when you buy that license, is that something that's transferable that you could sell on the secondary market, the license itself?
You can't sell it on the secondary market, but you can sell it, and it has to be approved by the team.
Now, what about in the case that you don't renew the season tickets? Do you forego that license?
Yes, you do.
Okay, and do they resell it, or do they,
they resell it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So, the thing is, at the end of the day, the owners, they're going to do whatever they can not to feel cheated out of the deal, and either they're going to, the city or county municipality is going to have to increase taxes, or they're going to have to somehow get them out of the fans, and, the owners, they don't want to put up as much, they're going to do whatever they can to not spend as much money. That's why they're feeling it.
Hey, I get it from the owner's perspective. I understand it completely. I don't understand it from the fan's perspective. And as someone that had to make that decision, I'm grateful now I'm grateful that we didn't do it. I'm grateful because I have no issues going any game I want to go, including the playoffs.
There's no investment there. I completely agree. There's no reason. You got StubHub. You can go pick up tickets any reason. I guess part of it with the 49ers, they're up and they're in the upswing.
Yep.
Harbaugh. And Harbaugh sold them, the owner knew that, got the money, and now they fired Harbaugh. I think they're coming up.
Here's something else that's better. Here's something else. Not only can I get tickets to any game I want, I can sit wherever I want.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's get to Larry. Hello, Larry.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
It's kind of obvious. The people that can afford the PSLs are already on the field in uniforms.
Oh, my gosh.
Drop the mic, Larry, and walk off.
That's it. Drop the mic.
Well, you know what? I would say up there in Silicon Valley area, there are probably a few more people that can afford those. But I understand what you're saying, Larry.
Yep.
All right.
I agree. Have a good show.
Thank you.
Grant, it kind of looks like gouging is what it looks like.
What it is we've got you raked over the coals, all right? And we're building a state-of-the-art, phenomenal stadium, but you're going to pay through the yin-yang, all right? And we know you're going to pay, and we don't care how you feel about it. And the difference between the Cowboys and the Rams, and by the way, if you look at the Dallas Cowboys, look at how many fans of other teams go buy Cowboy tickets, all right? And you can get tickets to you can go anywhere. Listen, I almost went to the Giants game in Lambeau last year, and I was going to buy playoff tickets on the secondary market. It was honestly only a few dollars more than what the face value was.
I was just about to say, maybe the only place that you can't get tickets is Lambeau Field.
No.
And bang, you dropped that on me.
No problem. Easy.
See,
no problem at all.
That is incredible. I mean, I guess that is for your You're super wealthy, hardcore
Here's
fan.
Here's what's happening in the NFL. And I love going to live games. Like, I will always go, and it's really important to me, okay? But there are a lot of people that even buy season tickets that don't go to every game because they'd rather sit at home and they play fantasy football and they want to watch all the games and keep track of all of their stuff. And you know what? It's true. Yeah. I look at tickets all over the place, and it's amazing what you can get. Hey, listen, if I want to go to the I want to go to the Bengals Packers game on Sunday, September 24th, mm-hmm. I can sit in the lower end zone, all right, for $156 right now.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, you know.
Yeah. If I want to go and sit
on the 25-yard line, I can do it for $275 at Lambeau Field. If I want to sit on the 50-yard line, guess what? $325. If I want to sit, you know, up in the second level behind the end zone, $185. Yeah, I guess why would I want to spend $25,000 on a seat license?
Yeah, you make the right investment, Grant. You can use the interest off of that money and buy a ticket whenever in the heck you want to.
I don't understand why fans, just because they can have the same seat for every game and they have the rights to playoff tickets. I mean,
do you get the ability to go? You know, like no. In Sacramento here at Golden One, you can go down into the lounges
no.
and all that
no.
stuff.
It not unless you're in the club level. No, of course not.
Wow.
No.
Yeah. Well, L.A. You pair it with as bad as they are, but I understand the real estate prices and a lot of different things. But $225,000 per seat.
What's the best home field advantage in football?
Seahawks?
Yeah, okay. All right, I want to go see Andrew Luck if he's playing in the Colts. I want to go up there and watch the game in Seattle, right?
Okay.
You know the end zone where the city's in the background? It's kind of neat, and I think those are great seats. I love sitting up high behind the end zone. $200 for a ticket if I want to go to that game.
Man,
all right, my point is, all right, if I want to sit – and by the way, I've been to the stadium several times, and I know it's a cliche. There are no bad seats in the stadium.
No doubt.
All right. If you want to sit in the upper tier, which, by the way, I went with my son to a game back in 2008, and it was great, $225 on the 50-yard line.
Wow.
Okay? And so even in a great, great market like Seattle,
yep.
I can there's go on the seats. StubHub, and I can buy tickets for what I think for an NFL game of that caliber in that stadium with that team is very reasonably priced. And here's the other deal. If I'm spending $50 more
right.
on the secondary market, all right, I'll take that $50 off the $25,000 that I would have had to pay for a PSL, and I think I'm still way ahead. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe you go put a down payment on a house.
Thank you. You know, right?
And ride the market. Wow.
I mean, you know, they're charging PSLs for the new arena for the Warriors.
Okay.
Well, the Warriors are the hottest thing going right now, and they're going to sell that out. I wonder what's going to happen when the Warriors aren't good anymore and how pissed off all those people are going to be that they spent that kind of money.
Yeah, because they won't be for 50 years.
No.
Yeah. They won't be riding high.
And by the way, I don't know what their policy is. I don't know what their plan is. I don't know what the cost is. So I don't know if it's going to be for 50 years. But the point is, it just doesn't sit well with me. Yeah. I've been through it.
I mean, for a few $1,000, I can understand that you put your seat on hold, and if you want to call that a PSL or whatever. But when you start talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, it doesn't make sense.
Steve Sands, Golf Channel, NBC Sports, next.